And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
You are now tuned into anything potable, the most honorable, the most audible. Hold the applause, like Paul Pierce when he was fresh out the hospital. Like
welcome
Antoine
to
when he shimmied after shots went through.
So
I am currently recording inside the law school, so I cannot yell. But it is me, your host, Sam Jam Packard.
Professional. Are you in like a library or something?
I'm in a study room. People around me are generally studying. It's just not a place for yelling anything is potable at the moment.
That was the weakest opening. You like yell whispered.
That was my goal, to yell whisper.
The old yell whisper.
Well, if I'm not going to do the
pretty
traditional,
weak, yeah, it's me.
If I'm not going to do the traditional info, I'm not going to call you the kid that got a legend. I just won't do that. I won't mention that. And we'll mention the fact that you're a Celtics beat reporter.
Well,
from
JK,
The Athletic.
He's Jam Packard. I'm a legend. He's not. I'm a hero. He's not.
JK, a hero among us who's been traveling with the Boston Celtics. He was there when they put a beat down on the Chicago Bulls. He was there when they rested Jason Tatum and Al Horford and actually played one of the more entertaining games of the year. We'll talk about both of those. And then, of course, you know, the kids has to be in Memphis for the Celtics final game of the year. We will break down all the kind of possibilities, where they could end up, whether or not they'll play guys, all things of all of that nature. But Jay, I think we should start with the two games they actually did play. I guess your biggest takeaways from just absolutely dismantling the broken Chicago Bulls. And then what do you think of the decision to rest Jason Tatum and Al Horford in that Milwaukee game?
That's a really interesting decision. And I don't know if it's the right one. I don't know if it's the wrong one. But I do know it is very interesting because they could have, by playing Tatum and Horford, by winning that game, they could have, the Celtics could have set themselves up for to be the favorites for the second seed and to control their own destiny for the second seed. Instead, they decided to sit two of their best players who, let's be honest, like they may have benefited from a little bit of maintenance, but they were not in any like rough shape physically. Al Horford had just dominated the Bulls. He had just gotten two games off for personal reasons, like a week before. Jason Tatum has been playing huge minutes all year. So maybe there's a benefit to resting him and to resting Horford, who's 35 and has rested, I think, once on the second leg of a back-to-back before. But that losing that game could be the reason that they play Game 7 on the road in the second round. It could also be the reason that they avoid Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving in the first round. So I honestly don't know what the right answer was there. There's so much still up in the air that maybe the Celtics just kind of threw their hands up in the air and said, let's just rest a couple guys. Let's get them right physically before the playoffs. But it was a decision. It was definitely a decision.
That's a cogent analysis there. They definitely made a choice. I think the thing that's interesting is that they didn't do it fully. Like, you think if they were fully trying to tank the game, then you probably rest Jaylen Brown as well, who's like was out of, missed that Toronto game for something with his knee. You probably also rest maybe Marcus Smart, although try asking Marcus Smart to rest that game. It like wasn't a full decision to rest all your guys and fully punt the game. Like, they had to know and had to be confident that like, at least the game was going to be competitive. I was personally surprised that giving 18 minutes to Luke Kornet and Sam Hauser resulted in such a close and fun game. But it wasn't like they fully endorsed the tank And we're like absolutely trying to lose the game. So is this like, it's like, maybe it wasn't even a decision at all. Maybe your cogent analysis was incorrect and they just basically punted and said, who knows what will happen. Like the Horford resting makes a little bit of sense. I feel like I saw his post game press conference in Chicago. It looked like at least the reporters there, you were in person, maybe like he wanted some rest.
I would guess that he already knew he was sitting the next night. And so when he was asked about how he was feeling physically, even though all season long, he's basically said, I feel great. He was like, yeah, I'm doing okay. And it was pretty clear at that point that he was probably going to sit the next night. But yeah, I mean, he's 35, but he whipped the ball ass. It wasn't like he looked like he was struggling. Like he had a great, great game against Chicago. So who knows? All I do know is that if they don't have home court advantage in the second round against Milwaukee, that will be a very tough series to win. If they do play Chicago in the first round, that will not be a tough series to win. Chicago's not very good at this juncture of the season.
That's the part that I've been trying to figure out and I've been wrestling in my brain the past couple of days. It's like, is a Raptors then Heat path more difficult than a potential Bulls Bucks path? And it's like, because the Raptors, I think the Celtics would beat the Raptors, but the Raptors are going to be so obnoxious to play against. Just like the high energy they bring, the number of like 6'8" guys they can throw at you, the obnoxious defensive schemes Nick Nurse is going to play. It's the Eastern Conference playoffs. It's going to be a difficult path no matter what. But the Bulls just look awful. Like the Bulls look like it's going to be an absolute cakewalk, and Zach LaVine doesn't have any sort of athleticism or burst. And so that looks like an easier path. Now, the Bucks is going to be an interesting question. I know the people who are much more optimistic than me, I know when we get to Joshua B's crazed rantings probably later in the episode, he's going to tell me the fact that the Celtics were that close without Tatum and Horford means they're going to have a cakewalk over the Bucks. And I just don't believe that to be correct. Like, the Celtics made a crazy number of threes, but I just don't know that necessarily having Tatum, like that game is evidence that once you put Tatum and Horford in the lineup, the Celtics are going to easily win. I think the Bucks are still like the prohibitive favorite to win the Eastern Conference. And so at this point, with the Celtics most likely ending up in the three seed, it's looking like the Bucks will be the team in the second round. So I have no idea what choice they're going to make heading into Sunday, but they're just going to have to show up and beat teams.
They are going to have to show up. How good has Marcus Smart been in the two shorthanded games? Like, he just took on the leading scorer responsibilities against Toronto. He took on leading scorer responsibilities against Milwaukee and just scored, I think, 29 points in each game, was creating his own offense, was creating for everybody else, was... I mean, Jaylen Brown had a triple-double, too, so Smart wasn't alone in doing that. But it's neat to see how he kind of transforms when he needs to. Without Tatum and Horford, obviously, those are two of the Celtics' best playmakers. And obviously, Tatum's the guy who creates his shot the most. And Smart just kind of said, all right, going to put these guys on my back tonight. And almost pulled him to victory. That was a fun game. I mean, what a wild game! Like Smart was drilling three after three. Hauser has probably the prettiest jump shot I've ever seen. Not his form. I'm not even talking about his form. Just the way the
arc of the ball, the moonshots.
It's like the softest shot ever. It's wild. You watch him and it just like lobs up there. It goes like so slow. I don't even know how he does it. It's a physics, just a unique physics trick that he pulls every time he shoots. It's just magic, physics magic. And I mean, I enjoy watching that dude's shots just blow through the air. But you know, it was a crazy game. And then at the end, they just stalled out offensively. At the end, their lack of size hurt them. Like when they don't have Robert Williams, Al Horford, and Jason Tatum, I mean, that hurts the defense. It definitely hurts the defense.
Yeah, and putting the ball, as good as Jaylen Brown was in getting that triple-double, him and Marcus Smart had some bad turnovers late in that game, which kind of led to the loss to the Bucks. You would think Jason Tatum is kind of be more sure-handed, but, you know, that's been kind of the issue with the Celtics is, like, how they're going to perform in the clutch, and it would have been interesting to see how they match up against the Bucks. The Bucks are, like, very interesting, and, like, the reason the Celtics were able to stay in that game is that they shot 40% from three, but they took 53s, and it felt like the game plan was, if you are open from three, you are absolutely going to take it. And I think obviously not having Tatum and Horford made it the Celtics' defense a little bit worse, and they gave up 127 points, and I think they've given up 120 points a fair number of times recently without Robert Williams. But the matchup with the Bucks is interesting just because they, I think for the fourth time in a row, lead the league in three-pointers given up. And it's just like, are the Celtics, that's kind of been one of their Achilles heels all year, is just not having that much shooting. Can they, for four games, just win the battle from the three-point line and just make enough threes to kind of beat the Bucks? Because the Bucks are going to give them to them. And it's like, Derek White was 4-for-8 from that game, and that was like a great sign if you're a Celtics fan, but Grant Williams was 0-for-4.
Yeah, he's starting to make shots. That could be a pretty big deal.
And it's like the Bucks, I think, have a over 500 record in games where they give up more than 23s. Like that is just like clearly part of their strategy. And so it's going to be an interesting chess match if that even happens. I mean, let's break down, like, let's talk about like the scenario going into Sunday. The Celtics can still end up anywhere from the 2 seed to the 4 seed. I'm assuming we're recording this on Saturday afternoon, midway through the Sixers-Pacers game. And although the Pacers have cut the lead a little bit, it's right now it's halftime. The Sixers are up by 12. I'm assuming the Sixers take that game, although they did blow a huge lead against the Raptors. So maybe the Pacers come storming back as soon as Joel Embiid leaves the floor. But it basically boils down to a scenario is if the Celtics win in Memphis and the Bucks win, they will get the 2 seed. And the only way the Celtics the 3 seed. And the only way the Celtics end up with the 4 seed is if they lose and the Sixers win against the Pistons. The only way to end up with a 2 seed is if they win and the Bucks lose to the Cleveland Cavaliers. And that game's a little bit more interesting. It's actually going to be played before the Celtics game because the Cavs have something to play for. They could end up, depending on kind of how Sunday turns out, anywhere from the 7 seed to the 10. So the you would think the Cavs are going to be motivated, the Bucks less so. But before that game in Memphis, the Celtics will kind of know where they stand. And so how do you think they're going to approach that game? Like, do you think they sit other guys? They don't really have an excuse built in of a back-to-back. Memphis has absolutely nothing to play for. They're locked in the 2 seed. If you are Ime Udoka.
Yeah, but John Morant may come back. But he was questionable for the Saturday's game. By the time people are listening to this, they'll know whether John Morant played. So if he doesn't play on Saturday against the Pelicans, I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh, they might want that tune-up, yeah.
If he plays Sunday, and if he plays, then maybe they'll play some other guys with him to give him that tune-up. So it's kind of all up in the air right now. As far as the Celtics go, I think they're going to play everybody. Or at least they're going to play Tatum and Horford, it sounds like. When Ime Udoka was asked about it, he said, basically, they'll have a bunch of days to rest. They just got rest. And he doesn't want them to have, like, 9 or 10 days between games. Like, that is a long time. So, sounds like they'll play at least. Maybe that's why they played Jaylen and Marcus Smart. Maybe they'll sit those guys in the season finale. Who knows? I'm not really sure how they'll handle it. But yeah, they could know by the end of that Bucks game whether they could get the 2, the 3, and kind of be able to dictate what they do. But we'll see. It certainly seemed like they weren't 100% invested in getting the 2 seed. But their decision to rest Tatum and Horford made that pretty clear.
I wasn't saying that they're afraid of the Nets
and want to avoid the Nets. It could have just been like, we don't really care whether we're the 2 or 3. We'd rather have guys healthy and give them a little break and not have them play a back-to-back right before the playoffs start. I'm not saying that they're necessarily like trying to avoid that matchup, but they had a chance to go all out for the 2 and decline that chance. So it's Udoka said that Greg Popovich never cared about the seedings, like just did not care. Just wanted his team healthy, wanted his team playing good basketball by the time the playoffs came. And maybe that's what Udoka has decided too, like screw it. And it's really different with the Celtics because like as much playoff success as Brown and Tatum and Smart have had, they've never been past the conference finals. This is a new team with a new coach. This is not Greg Popovich with Tony Parker and Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili. Like they knew what they were. They knew how to win on the road. They knew how to execute in the key moments. They knew what they were, whether they were on the road, at home, it didn't matter. But for this Celtics team, like being at home could matter, and or being on the road as they might be in a second round series against the Bucks could matter. So we'll see. What are like? Is there anything that you're worried about as the playoffs arrive? Has anything changed about how you're feeling about the playoffs over the last like week or so? And what do you see as like possible concerns that are lined up for the Celtics?
There really are no like huge concerns that have like come about. I think I was initially worried about maybe their offense falling out without Robert Williams, and maybe I'm putting too much into just the smackdown they put on the Bulls, but it feels like the ball movement when they're playing their full assortment of guys has still been there, and that like their offense isn't like likely to get as bogged down or ISO heavy. I guess the one concern is like crunch time in playoff games against a team with a good defense. So against a team like the Bucks, even against a team like Toronto, like I think they absolutely will beat the Toronto Raptors if they end up playing them. But it's like, what happens to that crunch time offense? They just haven't really been that efficient in that. I think that's like the one, I guess, major concern I would have. I think like they've shown some defensive lapses when they're not playing their main guys, but you know what? Like they're going to be playing Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown close to 40 minutes a game. And you're going to have Marcus Smart, Derek White, like Tice has filled in and been quite good. There's not that many like concerns, but I don't think I'm as confident in like, I think a Bucks series is going to go 6 or 7 games. They're just a very talented team, a very good team. I know the Celtics played well against them on Thursday, but it's not like I have supreme confidence that the Celtics would dominate that series or like that would be at all easy. They're the reigning NBA champions with, I think, one of the best players in the league. So I don't know if it's necessarily like there's any concerns going in. It's just like you just got to roll the basketball out there and play some basketball.
Yeah, and I think like when the trade deadline passed and the Celtics acquired Daniel Tice, I honestly thought that was a bad decision, or had a chance to be bad because just not because of him as a player or because of his fit. Like I think his fit was pretty clear. He already proven he'd complimented the team's best players, just because of the contract situation. And I still think that's something that could hinder them you know, next year, it could be something that either forces them to pay a huge luxury tax bill or limits what they can do, or forces them to move somebody, maybe Tice himself. But with the Robert Williams injury and the way Tice has played, it has been so important to get Tice, and the insurance policy that he represented behind Horford and Williams, who were question marks for different reasons. Horford because of his age, Williams because he's always had injury issues. It's just huge to have a dude who can come in and you don't have to change anything for him. He can run the pick and roll. He can pick and pop. He can switch onto guards. He can play drop and block shots. And he's not the same offensive rebounder that Robert Williams is. He's not the same athlete Robert Williams is, but he's athletic and he can crash the glass too. And so I just think the way he's played after a year or half a year in Houston, where they weren't even playing him, like, what were the Rockets doing? I know they got a young team, and I know he didn't fit well with Christian Wood, I guess, but like Daniel Tice couldn't play for the Houston Rockets this year.
Well, they signed him knowing that Christian Wood was on their team. Like, it wasn't like they were forced to accept him. Like, they went out and got him. It was a bit of a confusing signing there in Houston. But they're the team that traded for Dennis Schroeder. So can we really act like they know what they're doing down there in Houston?
It's funny in retrospect that he did not play at all in Houston, because he's come back to the Celtics and fit really well. And he is the type of guy who he plays better with good players. Like he fits next to really good players well. If you ask him to do more than that, like, you're asking the wrong guy. But the way he's played, I think, has shored up some questions. Like, when after the trade deadline, somebody who works for a team reached out to me and said Tice has been one of the, he said, maybe the worst player on the worst team in basketball this year. And I was like, oh shit. Like, well, he was pretty good for the Celtics last year. He's still in good shape. I imagine he's going to be okay going back to Boston. But, you know, I think there were at least some concerns from other people, not the Celtics, obviously, but and he's alleviated all of those. He's played really, really well. And like you said, the offense hasn't really skipped much of a beat without Robert Williams, which they haven't played the best competition except for the Bucks. And the making 21 threes like they did against the Bucks, they're not going to do that every night. It's not going to be Marcus Smart making 7 threes and Tice going 3 for 3 and Pritchard and Hauser coming in and just going nuts. But I do think the way he's played has lifted some confidence. Like, he's going to be okay in a playoff series. I don't know how he'll hold up against if they run into like Joel Embiid or somebody, but it'll be totally fine against the Bulls or whoever else in the first round, I think.
So what do you think the best path is right now? Like, most likely, I think whatever the Basketball Reference probabilities has them getting the 3 seed, but they still have like a 10% chance to get the 2, like a 30% chance to get the 4. What, like, it, if you were in charge and can kind of just choose what the Celtics got, what do you think is their best path heading into the playoffs? Because I just don't have an answer right now. It doesn't feel like they really care about seeding, but like, I think each of the paths presents an issue, but also they have some advantages as well.
Yeah, I think, to me, like, the Bucks are the best team in the East. And if you could avoid them, that'd be cool. But that would mean falling to 4. The Heat are 3-2.
Do you tank the game? Do you tank the games just to play the Raptors in the first round to avoid the Bucks?
Just to maybe play the Raptors. And honestly, Al Horford came out and said he's vaccinated, but we don't know that the Celtics will have everybody available for that game for sure.
Yeah, can we talk about that? Where did that, like, it came out. First, there was a report that him and Jaylen were not vaccinated. Then Himmelsbach reports that Horford is vaccinated. Jaylen and Ime said that, like, everyone would be available in any situation, but they also, like, didn't say it in a clear way, like, everyone is vaccinated and thus will be available. Like, they avoided the actual saying, like, I can't tell if they're, like, trying to pull some Aaron Rodgers shenanigans and, like, I am inoculated, but, like, what's going on there? How do we not know this at this point? And is Jaylen saying that he would be ready to play anywhere? Is that enough for us to just be like, yeah, that is true?
I honestly don't know. It's a weird thing to report on, because obviously there's a lot of privacy issues, and obviously those guys have been asked. Horford, before coming out and saying, telling Himmelsbach that he was vaccinated, like, he gave not a sidestep answer, but it wasn't
the same, like, vague answer that, like, Jaylen gave. And so Jaylen giving a vague answer is an indication of his vaccination status whatsoever, as seen by Horford.
It could be. Yeah. I mean, it could be,
but it could also just be like him being weird and vague. Like, who knows? Because Horford was just that weird and vague.
So honestly, I am not 100% sure either way. And I don't want to speculate on something like that. And it's been really weird to try to report on that, because obviously it's a big deal. Obviously, you know, even though the Celtics, as we record this podcast, are less likely to play the Raptors, like, there's a chance they play the Raptors. There's a chance the vaccination status moves from, you know, not just a big deal, like, public health wise, but a big deal with who's available for games 3, 4 and 6 of a playoff series. And so if you have everybody available, let's act like they would have everybody available. I do think the Raptors would obviously be a tougher first round series than the Bulls.
Oh yeah, the Bulls are a joke. The Bulls have zero chance of winning a first round series.
So if the Celtics were able to choose between 3 and 4, they should choose 3, I think, because then first round is a joke. And I do think Milwaukee's better, but Miami's great too. And so you're not, like, really, you wouldn't be happy about facing Miami. So I would go 3 if I were them, but 2 to me is the desirable seed. And I know that could mean a first round series with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And I know Kevin Durant especially is terrifying. But I really don't think the Nets are a great basketball team. And I don't think they have enough size, especially on the perimeter. They're going to be playing a bunch of guys 6'3" and below. I think the Celtics would score at will in that series. And I don't think, if you're a championship caliber team, I don't think you should be worried about the Brooklyn Nets. And I could be proven wrong. Kevin Durant could absolutely prove me wrong. But I would rather play the, if I were the Celtics, I would rather play the Nets and have a chance to have home court against Milwaukee than the alternative, which would be an easy first round playoff series, easier first round playoff series. And then you have to win on the road against the defending champion. Like, that's a really daunting task to me, going into Milwaukee and beating Giannis and beating Chris Middleton and beating Drew Holiday. Like, that is a gargantuan task to ask of a team. And so I could be wrong though. Like Kevin Durant is crazy good. He's crazy good. Like,
he's still Kevin Durant. And if anyone could just, like, single-handedly dominate a series and win 4 out of 7 just based on, like, their own performance alone, Like, I feel like I would bet on Kevin Durant to do that. I agree with you that I think the Celtics are just, like, a much better team, and the Nets just don't play defense whatsoever. But there is that, like, fear. Like, Kevin Durant took the basically Bucks 2-7 games last year pretty much by himself. I know James Harden was playing, but he had basically had no hamstring. Like, Kevin Durant is capable of doing it, but I think that that Nets team is better.
I want to fight back against that a little bit. Because the Nets won the first two games. I think the first
game... Kyrie was still playing, right?
I think the first game, were they all available? But Kyrie was still 100% for those first two games. So it's not like he actually won by himself. He won one game.
Kyrie will be available in this situation as well. Kyrie is also
agreed.
A good basketball player.
But I think the Nets supporting cast isn't as good. Like last year, Blake Griffin in the playoffs was very good for them. He was good defensively. He was able to be physical for them inside. Jeff Green was very good defensively for them. Like, they had more defensive options than they do now. Now they're throwing out, you know, Steph Curry, Kyrie Irving, Goran Dragic, Patty Mills. So many of their best players are tiny and not known for their defense at all. So I just think that even compared to last year's team, which had defensive issues, this Nets team is like, their defensive personnel is significantly worse. Even Harden, you know, for all the flaws he has defensively, he's 6'7" and a house and can hold up in the post on switches really well. Like, what do you do if you're the Nets and you have to switch, like, Curry, Kyrie, Patty Mills, onto Tatum or Brown, or, like, even Marcus Smart and Derek White would have size advantages in those matchups. So I'm not at all sold that the Nets will have enough defensively. But then again, if Kevin Durant keeps it close and Kyrie Irving keeps it close,
it's Kevin Durant.
Then you're in a close game against Kevin Durant, and that could be scary. That could be really fucking scary.
I mean, Jason Tatum had to score 50 for just to, like, win that duel, that, like, Sunday afternoon duel the Celtics had earlier in the year. Like, it's quite scary. Here's the question, though. Like, who are a scarier opponent for the Celtics? Is it the Nets or would it be the Raptors? I don't know why. The Raptors have, like, spooked me over the last 2 weeks. But, like, for some reason, it's just the pesky. Maybe it's just the series that they played against the Celtics in the bubble and that OG shot. But the Raptors clearly have not had as good of a second half of the season as the Celtics have, but they've been pretty damn good, and they've played themselves basically with a chance of getting in the fourth seed, like, if everything breaks their way. I don't know. They clearly would not have any of the best players in the series and have no player who's near Kevin Durant, but I feel like just as a team playing basketball, like, the Raptors are a much better team at this point. Than the Nets, and I think they're like the most dangerous first round opponent. And, like, I don't think it's at all worth it to try and kind of get the Heat in the second round to drop down to play the Raptors, just because I think the Raptors are playing pretty damn good basketball right now. And as much as I hate him, I think Nick Nurse is a pretty good coach.
Yeah, he's a really good coach. He would junk up that series. If you listen to Tatum talk about the last time they played the Raptors in the playoffs back in the bubble, like, he said that was, like, the most grueling series that he's ever dealt with. And that Raptors team was a little different. Obviously, they had Kyle Lowry, but sort of the same philosophy they have now, which is that they just have a ton of guys who can guard their man, and they played tons of different coverages. They'll switch in zone. They'll do weird stuff. They have just a lot of guys that can give you problems. And so I do think they'll be a tough out. I don't think they have enough, like, shot making, like, against a great defense. And Pascal Siakam has to hit, like, a bunch of jumpers that he's created
Man, here's their biggest problem. It's all comes down to pass game.
That's their flaw. But I do think, like, they could really give you a tough series. And win or lose, like, you come out of that, you could be bruised. You could be, you know, I don't think the Celtics ever really recovered from that series against the Raptors in the bubble. If you remember that series, it was 2-0.
I think they'll win. The Celtics would absolutely win, but it's just like, do you want to go through an absolute dogfight of, at like, I would say a maximum 6 games before heading into the second round to play like the Miami Heat? It just wouldn't be fun for the Celtics. It would just be like grinded out games where they're like Jason Tatum's getting draped and covered, and they're throwing out zones that we never even seen before. Oh, this is a total sidebar. How do you feel about 2-3 zones in men's league games?
Don't get me started on that. That is the most cowardly bullshit a person can do. If you're capable of playing men's league, and you're capable of getting out there and physically stepping onto that court, then play a fucking man. I don't care if you don't have any subs. I don't care. Like, this is fucking men's league. If you're sitting back in a zone, I played in one league where almost every team played zone. I was like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, it's terrible.
Like, why are these teams all playing zone? Like, this is so fucking stupid. Just guard a man and man up. Sometimes you got to throw out a zone if like the other team is just torturing you or something. They have a guy you just can't guard, whatever. But if zone is your primary defense, even if it's not, like, just fucking man up. Honestly, that pisses me off. I'm sure some people will disagree with this take, but you should play man to man in men's league. And if you don't, you're the biggest coward.
So I was in my. I was in my men's league semifinals against a team that we had beaten twice before, and they exclusively play zone for the entire, like, every single game of the season. They have like one of the Proposition Joe guys who, like, he basically brought a clipboard to the game. He didn't wear the full suit, but like, is coaching his men's league team. We fell down by 20 in the first half just because we could not hit a shot in the 2-3 zone. So we were just like, man, if they're going to go zone, we're going to go zone. And we come storming back. We tie the game. We actually got up 1, but then ended up losing by 2. But it was just like the second half of the game where it's just two teams playing 2-3 zones. Like, this is not why we come out here. This is just like nonsense. Like, we're not practicing zone busting. It was just ugly basketball. And as a basketball fan and participant, I hated to see it. I hate that we had to resort to playing 2-3 zone to defeat the 2-3 zone. But it was just poor stuff. It should be outlawed. Maybe like occasional zone. If you're gonna go zone, give me something else than 2-3. Give me a hustle man though. Give me a half court trap. Maybe a 1-3-1. The team even ran a couple possessions of box in one on our best guy, and I just thought, this is not what men's league is about. It was disgusting.
I mean, you should have slapped that dude.
He is about 5 inches taller than me, and like got 100 pounds on me.
It does not matter. At some point, if you're throwing out a box and one in fucking men's league, you deserve to get Will Smith.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
All right, I have another ethical question. This is on the courts of a pickup. I played my first outdoor pickup yesterday, and the first game was like, oh, everyone's shooting to make teams. And this kid is like 13, got in the line to shoot. And he ended up making a shot, so he ends up on the team. And I end up playing against him. I end up match.
What kind of pickup game are you playing? You're playing against 13-year-old.
It was like everyone saw him on the line, but no one was like going to be enough of a jerk to be like, yo, man, you can't play with us. And so like we went and let him play.
Sorry, brother. This is for the big boys.
Well, you'll see what happened. I end up matching up against him. I'm not going to like go hard. Like I made the decision like, I'm not going to, like, I'll play on him. I'm not going to, like, sag off on defense and just, like, completely make it unfair against the other team. Like, I want people to still have a good run. I didn't attack him on offense. Pretty much I just got the ball. I shot. I actually made a couple shots, which, as you know, Jay King, is shocking for me. But, like, midway through the game, this kid is shooting just, like, threes. And I'm basically giving it to him because they're not going to go in. And at some point he just shoots one or tries to shoot one. Close to me and like way too close where he should have known like he had no chance of getting the shot off. And so it just instincts kicked in and I just Time Lord blocked him. I just stuffed his shit into the next into the backcourt, just like completely demoralized this. I didn't like want to be mean, but it came off as mean and he immediately quit the game and left the playground. And I want to know if I was in the wrong at all for making this 13-year-old boy leave the playground in shame.
You are in the wrong. You are in the wrong because you didn't do it earlier. You waited until,
I should have done on the first
that
shot.
Stage of the game. You should have, the first time he got the ball, you should have Marcus Smarted that shit out of his hands, just gone in and ripped it away. You should have when you got the ball,
nice.
You should have hit him with the shoulder, fucking gone straight to the cup.
I'm not going to hurt the kid.
I'm not telling you to hurt him. I'm telling you to show him he doesn't belong on that court. He knew he didn't belong on that court. Once you blocked him, he knew. But you should have let him know that a long time before that. You know, you got to learn it. If you're going to play with the big boys, you got to be a big boy too. And so, some 13-year-olds are ready for that. Some are. But if you're not, go to some other court. We're not here to baby your seventh grade ass. We're not here. We're not here to be sensitive to your feelings. We're here to get dubs and we're here to get our cardio up. We're here to get a sweat in and we're here to kick some ass, whether that's 13-year-old or not. So I am ashamed of you. I'm just ashamed of you in a different reason than you probably expected.
I think the fact that he left exonerates me from all wrongdoing because it shows he wasn't ready to play. Like I've hooped with like some teenagers before who like play high school basketball and like, are you ready for the wild world of chaos that is Joshua B?
Yes, I am.
All right, now Joshua, before you get on, we're going to have to institute some rules. We gave you like 10 minutes last time. We're going to
succinct
and to the point here. Yeah, this is the new Josh rule.
The new Josh rule. We're going to hit the mute button if you hijack the show too much. We love you. We love your opinions. But we have to implement the Josh rules from now on. Josh, what do you feel about the Josh rule?
I don't hijack the show. Where is this coming from?
Hey man, you're coming into our lane. I feel threatened by your presence. So
do us all a favor. Since I'm coming into your lane, do us all a favor. And when you start the show by saying we have to talk about two games, don't just focus on the Bucks loss, because you should be focusing also on the fact that we rode those Chicago Bulls like a mechanical bull to the tune of 23 points, and we stomped them into the ground like we owned those people. Can you hear me?
Everyone has owned the Bulls lately.
Yeah, including us. And that's sort of the point, right?
Yeah, but that's like celebrating me for blocking the shot of a 13-year-old.
Okay, how about we celebrate the fact that we took the lead against the Bucks over and over and over and over again? Can we celebrate that? Because I celebrated that. I celebrated it watching the entire game, that we continued to take the lead despite missing Tatum, despite missing Horford, and despite missing Rob Williams. And we're not going to miss any of those three the moment that we hit the Bucks when we're in the second round. Or we could celebrate that we're going to face the Bulls again in the first round, more likely. Or we could celebrate the idea that the Toronto Raptors are going to blow the 76ers' boards off. Let's celebrate any of that. I thought that Bucks game was an outstanding reminder to everybody who watches the Celtics that we are 5 points better than the Bucks at their place on the road, assuming we have Jason Tatum and Robert Williams and Al Horford. We took that lead over and over. And that game was a statement. That was a statement to Jay King. It was a statement to everybody. But the person that it was really a statement to was Chris Middleton, who discovered that, yes, he's going to have to guard Marcus Smart, or he's going to do exactly what I predicted on the podcast, which is score 35 points a game. I seem to remember saying that. And that's damn close to what happened. You know, no takes. Nobody.
So if the Celtics were to play the Bucks in the second round, how many games do you think the Celtics would need to beat them in a series?
Answer me only one question, and I promise you I will answer yours. How many starters do we get to play with? Do we have to go all the way down to one the way we did against the Raptors?
It's the full complement of starters. It's Rob Williams, and you don't know how he's going to perform coming back from his torn meniscus.
Celtics in five. Celtics in five, and that's with the Bucks having home court advantage. We win. We split the first two. And we win our two at home, and then we come home and we remind the Bucks that before last year, we were better than them, and we're still better than them if we have everybody. And Robert Williams.
So in a hypothetical finals against the Suns, how many games would it take the Celtics to win?
No, we would lose against the Suns. But getting through the Eastern Conference is a completely different story. I'm not even sure that Miami is going to be able to handle the Raptors. You know, I think the Raptors, I agree with Jay King. I think the Raptors are playing phenomenal team basketball right now. Every game that I watch of the Raptors shows them whopping on people, much like the Celtics whenever we're not sitting starters. Really? Really? I mean, that's my take on it. That's what I think is going to happen. I get it, and I'm a bit of an optimist. But I also think that the reality of the situation is that every loss that we've had over the last month has been with us sitting people, whether it's Al Horford due to personal issues, whether it's Jason Tatum doing this knee tendinopathy, or Jaylen Brown takes a night off, or whatever. And we still lost to only, I mean, I think we've lost to like four teams in like the last 2 months. And all of those teams have been Eastern Conference contenders, and all of those teams have faced us when we have been down our complement of starters. No? Here, there's my 10 minutes. See you in the
I think it's a... I clicked the button too early, but I think it's a fair point that Josh brings up. Like, the Celtics have been very good, especially with all of their starters. I don't know what they're going to get from Robert Williams when he comes back, but like, there's reason to be quite optimistic in any playoff series the Celtics play. Like, there's nothing they've done over the past 2 weeks that would say they're not going to be at least in every single game that they play. Like, I just would be shocked if they got blown out in any sort of playoff city.
I know some very smart people who think the Celtics, if they are healthy, should be the favorites in the Eastern Conference. So,
you know, Josh B.
I do know Josh. Josh B is a very smart man. He's a very smart man. I don't think they should be the favorites just because Milwaukee has done it before, and that means something to me. But yeah, they're up there, and they've played ridiculous basketball over the last few months. Nobody's played better, even the Suns, although they're ridiculous. And I think during that stretch, they have an even better record than the Celtics. They have just been humming along, no matter what, whether they have Chris Paul or not.
That is a fair point. I've run out of things to say about Boston Celtics. I think we can
rejoin you guys and give you some more analysis once we figure out what the actual seed is. I'm guessing it will be the 3 seed. I think they win in Memphis and then just kind of lock themselves into the 3 seed. And we'll have a very easy series against the Chicago Bulls. Jay, any predictions? I know you don't like making predictions, but where do you think the Celtics end up? And where, like, what seed?
I think they end up in the 3 seed just because that's the most probable.
Oh, Jay King, playing the odds.
Sticking with the odds. But who knows? I mean, Milwaukee could decide to sit everyone, and Milwaukee's in the driver's seat, really, to determine who gets to play where. And maybe they decide, you know what, we'd rather not see Kevin Durant in round one. But maybe they don't. Maybe they fucking don't, Packard. Celtics.
maybe they don't. Playing the odds, figure it out. All this playoff chicanery. We'll be back early next week. I can't yell. We've already established this. I'm in the law school. So, Jay, I'm just going to give it to you to end the podcast.
Anything is potable.
You coward. You coward.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.